Hey, Project Big Screen listeners, you can find us every Monday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Stella Blue Coffee is more than just great coffee. It's coffee with a purpose. Introducing We Brew to Rescue, a nationwide campaign using proceeds from our new ready-to-drink cans to help fund 1,000 pet adoptions this year. Every can you crack open helps a real pet find a real home. Simple as that. Made with 100% Colombian coffee, each 11-ounce can delivers smooth, drinkable energy with a boost of protein. Available in espresso cafe mocha and espresso sweet cream. Built for mornings, long days, and everything in between. Drink Stella Blue, fuel your day, and help save a pet's life. You can follow our progress in real time throughout the campaign by watching the adoption tracker on our site. Grab yours now at StellaBlueCoffee.com. Amazon and select retailers nationwide.
Frankly, my dear, I don't give a damn.
What killed the dinosaurs? The Ice Age!
You want to come and join with you?
I'm gonna make you famous, Lizzie.
It's not Al anymore! It's Dunk!
Dunkachino?
Don't mind if I do!
I'm the Joker, baby!
Lights, Camera, Barstool is presented by Omega Accounting Solutions. On this episode of Lights, Camera, Barstool, we are reviewing Black Panther, Wakanda Forever. Also interviewing Glenn Powell, who is in a new movie, Devotion, alongside Jonathan Majors. Also is in Top Gun Maverick earlier this year as well. And then we'll be talking about the John Wick Chapter 4 trailer, the rumors of an Indiana Jones series after Indiana Jones 4 releases. And then we will also
respect the Crystal Skull.
And we'll also be ranking our top comic book movie sequels on the heels of the release of Black Panther Wakanda Forever. Once again, this episode presented by Omega Accounting Solutions. Attention, small business owners. You might be eligible to receive up to $26,000 per employee through the Employee Retention Credit. Omega Accounting Solutions can help you recover payroll tax overpayments. And determine if you are eligible to receive up to those $26,000 per employee. All it takes is a quick, easy, and free, keyword free, 10-minute consultation to determine if you qualify. Omega is the small business champion. They have teams dedicated to maximizing tax credits. CPAs even turn to Omega for ERC guidance. So that means very helpful for you, and again, free, to potentially get $26,000 per employee. Take advantage of this exclusive small business tax credit. Now, the three-year sunset deadline for filing begins to close on March 31st, 2023. So learn if you qualify today. Act now. It's a little ways away, but act now. Call 800-300-9ERC. 800-300-9ERC. That's 800-300-9ERC. Which if you don't know the how letters work on the phone, that's 800-900-372. I feel like some people don't know
if
how to
you're
do that.
Too young to know what that is. Yeah. If you're too young to know what that is, you probably don't need the ERC, I would imagine. You're not at the stage in your life when you would need the ERC.
T9 rule.
Yeah, it's like you don't know now, like it's you got no shot. 800-300-9ERC or visit omegataxcredits.com now.
T9 was the best because you could just like text in your pocket. So exactly. You didn't even have to pull the phone out.
Yeah, T9 texting was before its time. Too before its time, I might say. That's why we're using keyboards now. That guy, you know, the T9 guy still brags about it too.
Perfect for guys with like big stubby fingers like me. Like my fingers are a little sausages. I fuck up, like Jeff can tell you, like I fuck up texting all the time. My words come out like I misspell like that. Like I think every single time I try to type.
Well, I use a mechanical gaming keyboard at my desk at work, and I'm still not quite used to it because the keys are so. It's an awesome keyboard, but I just can't type anything. Just
that's
nothing.
Just loud as hell too.
I just
sounds like a damn
nonsense.
Typewriter and just getting everything wrong.
It is. Yeah, it's just complete fucking nonsense that I type. And now I spend the first half of my weeks at home because we have horrible internet. And no room to record anything at work.
It's incredible.
Love my company. Love where we work. But recording at work is next to impossible, especially if like you have to do something more than just needing like a mic. If you need like computers and a setup, you can't do it. So now I type in this flat keyboard, then I come into work and I type like a fucking moron. What's going on?
Not much. Movies. I had a great weekend. I don't know. Oh. But not having football.
Did you see The Fabelmans before us?
I did. I saw it yesterday. It's so good. Mm. It's a lock for Best Picture. Like, it's gonna
win. No Bengals, plus you got to see a Steven Spielberg banger. That's a pretty good weekend.
Always nice.
Yeah, oh my gosh. And the theater was packed with the olds were out and about. Let me tell you. There's so many olds. I had two olds next to me getting a fight because they like,
did you see the new Spielberg banger?
They were like, they just don't know how the like assigned seating works. So like one old person like just came in and sat down where this other guy's wife had been sitting. Uh-oh. And she had gotten up and gone to the bathroom. And he's like, no, this is my assigned seat. He's like, assigned seat.
My wife's seat.
Well, that's like, I mean, Ken Jack and I dealt with that for a long time we still do. Though I know you venture in other theaters, but the AMC that we go to in Manhattan is in a very much older part of
old ass neighborhood.
And it's been there for decades. Yeah, it's been there for decades. So when they switched to assigned seating, you had these old people, and we would go like matinee showtime. So we'd go when the olds retired would go, and they just assigned seating was irrelevant to them, or like just meaningless.
The guy whose wife it was, he like turned to me. He's like, "What the hell is that?"
The best one. Well, best example forget. Of that, I was about to say. I think you're thinking of the same thing. Death of Stalin. When all the olds came and they thought it was going to be like some sort of like legit biopic or something like or historical or story or something or drama. And they're just sitting there watching like fucking Jason Isaacs rip joke after joke. And they're just like, what the fuck is going on here?
The English accent.
Yeah.
Two behind us. When Stalin pisses himself or whatever it is when he dies. I just remember them going, oh
that's man. Just like, crude.
They were so upset. Speaking of old, disliked political figures, it's a segue for Hitler. I watched one of the weirdest things I've ever seen.
I thought you were going to talk about The Crown.
Mm-hmm.
No, I told you when people told me that I would need to take a break from that show, they were absolutely correct. You need to just like, you need a week or two in between watching episodes of that sometimes. After, I watched like two seasons in 2 days. My Neighbor Adolf.
Hell yeah.
So I was scanning movies that are out, and like that's kind of how Ken Jack and I do it, and I'm sure you're the same, Gooch. The more you watch, you just come, you gotta scan sometimes on some of these like I guess bootleg websites.
Yeah,
which I feel good about saying this, by the way, because recently a bunch of directors like the Daniels, Barry Jenkins were like, yeah, just fucking bootleg my movie.
And you're not, Weird Al,
it's not in theaters.
Weird Al had a great tweet about it for Weird, his movie. He's just like, yeah, if you can't find it in your country, like Roku won't stream it. I'm sure that you could find a way to like, and he wordplayed it into saying like torrent it somewhere, torrential downpour, as he said. It's very funny.
So I was scanning and I'm like, holy shit, what is My Neighbor Adolf? It also looks, the poster is very blurry, so it looks like Mark Rylance was in the movie. So I'm like, oh, wow, really? He's doing a weird, like, Jojo Rabbit type movie? No, it's not. It's two, like, German actors. And it's about a guy who, a Holocaust survivor, who thinks he's living next to Adolf Hitler. And it's just not, all the grace and nuance that allowed Jojo Rabbit to work just don't work here. Incredibly unsatisfying movie. But I also stumbled upon RIPD2 Rise of the Damned, which I didn't know existed.
That's a movie that definitely has like probably three more sequels you've never heard of before. That's like Home Alone type territory where I'm sure whoever owned the IP to RIPD was like, make as much as you want as long as I get paid from it. I don't give a shit.
Yeah. If I get a check for $60, that's a win for me.
I actually just watched a TikTok of
not good.
What was the worst Gronkowski brother? Like, athletically speaking, Chris?
Probably he's Chris.
He was unboxing his residual from saying the word hey on an episode of Family Guy. He got $20. Got $20 in a week for just saying hey in an episode of Family Guy.
Not bad.
Fuck, man.
Not bad. Next week, by the way, we're reviewing The Fabelmans. Which I don't know how when that becomes fully wide. I think it is this week, though, right?
Some point this week, no?
I actually don't think it is until, like, Thanksgiving. Well, actually, yeah. I think it was November 23rd it goes wide, so we may have to hold off.
All right, so we'll debate that, but we are reviewing Terrifier 2 next week.
The people are they're buzzing about Terrifier 2.
Jeff, are you look, is this a bit? Is this a bit you're doing?
It's not a bit. I know this movie, and you're on TikTok more than I am. I know this movie was helped a lot via TikTok and social media. Like, look, Terrifier 2 isn't winning any Oscars.
They submitted it.
And I'm going to tell you right now.
They submitted it.
They did submit it. You're right. Because they submitted it. That reason is enough alone. Because I said the thought of Academy voters having to watch Terrifier 2, which I'm going to warn you, it's fucking a lot.
Yeah.
It's a lot for a horror. It was produced by a company called Bloody Disgusting, which is it's kind of like the comicbookmovie.com of the horror world. It's made like a pretty good amount of money for like what the budget is. It's made $10 million on a $250,000 budget. All I know is Gooch is very upset. Gooch is not a horror guy.
Jeff goes.
When I sent him the trailer for Terrifier 2, you were like, no.
Jeff goes, there's a big social buzz for Terrifier 2.
I mean, he's not wrong. It is. You go on TikTok, on Film Talk, like it's everywhere, dude. Everyone's just buzzing about this. This fucking clown.
I did get
Gooch just doesn't like Art the Clown. He's no pun intended. He's terrified of Art the Clown.
I am. I did get someone, speaking of social buzz, I got someone ask me about the most random show ever on Saturday night. They go, hey, are you watching Tulsa King?
Oh, I keep seeing stuff for that.
Yes.
Sylvester Stallone on what is it, Paramount Plus or something?
Yeah, I think
we're
at Paramount Plus.
Yeah. But I was just like, what? He's like, yeah, Tulsa King with Sylvester Stallone. I was like, no, no. He acted like everyone's watching it.
It just came out, though, like today or yesterday.
In the Tulsa King.
Yeah, it's a new crime show starring Sylvester Stallone as someone in like the mafia or something.
That makes sense. He was at UFC with that was a crowded ass fight with celebrities. Then Halle Berry sitting next to Big Cat. Yeah, Sylvester Stallone like walked past him, a couple other people too. Like there's one point I was watching where it was they zoomed in on one guy. I forget who it was. Like we'll say it's Sylvester Stallone. He pulls in Miles Teller and I think his wife or something, and the announcer's just like, "Yeah, there's Sylvester Stallone, some guy." Like they had no idea who Miles Teller was at all. It was like John Anik too. You figured he would know.
Who was it? Oh, Jared Leto was sitting behind
in the fit.
Our co-worker slash bosser, yes.
Would you say, boss, have you seen it yet? Have you watched Terrifier?
Both have, right?
Yeah, we both have.
Would you say it's more or less terrifying?
It's too terrifying.
It's a lot. It's a lot to handle. If you do not like gore and like really fucked up horror shit, there's never been a movie made less for you than this one. It's like, I have friends who are pretty big horror. My good friend, my barber, Jeremy, he's our age, Marvel guy, loves all that shit, big horror guy. He was like, he told me, he's like, did you see Terrifier 2? He's like, yeah. He's like, ah. He goes, that was a lot in some points. It's a lot to handle. Some of it's like too much, but we got to talk about it.
I mean, I couldn't sleep for like a week after I saw Scooby-Doo Zombie Island, so I'm sure this will be fine.
you may quit this podcast.
Yeah, so Terrifier 2, I just saw on before Bloody Disgusting site, they said, we officially submitted Terrifier 2 for Oscar consideration because it's too funny not to. We won't win, it's a goof, but the thought of having Academy members endure an unrated horror movie that they'd otherwise consider beneath them is too hilarious to pass up. So yeah, I kind of like that from a horror group.
It's a big leap of it's a big leap of faith thinking that Academy voters watch every movie.
That too.
That's true too. Andor episode 10, probably the best of the series. Spoilers if you haven't seen Andor. The prison escape, unreal. Unreal episode. Just like I think it's if not top 5, it's cuz it's top 3 Star Wars. Like it truly is one of the best Star Wars things ever released. I mean, yeah, it's Andor in a whole. Like, I'm getting ready to just say I just think Andor's better than Mandalorian. I think I like Mandalorian more just on like a fan point, just like of like the nerdy Star Wars Easter eggy shit, but Andor is a prestige level TV show that if you put it on fucking HBO on a Sunday night, you wouldn't bat an eye.
People would be creaming their pants over too if it was on HBO, without a doubt. Like the reaction to Andor, but people have watched it have liked a lot. But like if you put it on HBO, like people would be buzzing about it like it is a prestige show. They'd be going nuts over it. And I think I agree with you in that. it's like from a technical standpoint, a superior show to Mandalorian so far. But also, again, agreeing with you that like as a Star Wars dumb brain fan, like I would rather watch an episode of Mandalorian just because like I'm interested in that part of the lore. But from like a pure technical show execution standpoint, Andor is just unbeatable. It's like incredibly good. And I've been saying this since we saw those screeners. I was like, episode 10, people are going to go nuts for, because that is easily the best of the season. Really, really good acting throughout it. Awesome monologue and speech from two different people in this episode. And I would say Stellan Skarsgård, is his speech in that is one of the better scenes I've seen on TV in a while. And Andy Serkis for a guest spot in this was unreal. So good. Although we could do some spoilers right here. We reset spoiler free. The fact that he got left behind is now going to spawn a million people thinking he's going to somehow get turned into Snoke. So I really wish they just either they killed him or something there. Yeah. It was great for the episode, but I kind of wish they just killed him.
Did Gilroy comment? Somebody said, like, did you see him die? He didn't die. So
he said something like, maybe he's alive. He's too good to be killed or something like that.
I'd rather he be dead, and I'll give my thoughts here in a second. I'd rather he be dead just because I think it plays into the overall show's like messaging, which is there's all these nameless faces in the fight against fascism, and I think it just falls more in line with the whole messaging behind the show. But other than that, oh my gosh, this show is, like Jeff said, it's prestige television. Every time you finish an episode or start an episode, you feel like the HBO logo with the blank screen should be popping up. I mean, it's just fantastic. I think the enjoyment from non-Star Wars fans or Star Wars fans that are, you know, don't have a full shelf of Kinder toys behind them. I think you get a lot more enjoyment out of it because you're not constantly looking for Easter eggs or any of the other Star Wars quirks. It's just well-made television. It's fantastic. It's going to sweep the Emmys, at least in terms of nominations, and probably pull a lot of wins. It's hard to imagine a scenario in which it doesn't win like five Emmys, like in major categories. Like it's fantastic. Luthen's speech, my God, just Shakespearean.
Mm-hmm.
It was Shakespearean. Yeah. I mean, the dialogue there, and it doesn't come off cheesy.
Bitch, you ain't going anywhere.
That's the wild thing is like you drop that speech in The Rise of Skywalker and it's completely out of place, cheesy, and doesn't work. You drop it here and it works so well. And Stellan Skarsgård was the perfect person to deliver it. I mean, just fantastic. I made my mind a sunless space. Mm-hmm. I burned my life for a sunrise I'll never
great
see.
Great line.
Dude, incredible. I wake up every morning to an equation I wrote 15 years ago. I'm damned for what I do. Like, oh
awesome
my gosh.
Line.
Dude. And then Kino delivering his monologue too, his massive speech to the prison. It's really cool because that's basically the message that Luthen at the beginning of the series gave to Cassian, and then Cassian passed on to Kino, and then he's run, fight, kill. That's the only way out. Like it's awesome. Mm-hmm. I mean, I love it. And I said it 3 weeks ago. I think it's the best thing since Empire. I'm gonna be really sad when this comes to an end.
Yeah,
because this has been fun every single week, and now I'm really excited for what's to come.
Yeah, I've still got the two episodes, right? So that's what I'm really curious. What they do now.
Yeah, I don't even have any idea what's going to happen.
No. I mean, I guess they start a new arc here. They're on the run, him and Ham.
Fucking Ham.
I think there's some space battle-y stuff that happens because I do know in the trailer there's a specific scene of like a TIE fighter or a ship. So I think we're going to get some sort of space stuff, which would make
maybe
sense.
Maybe that's it. They're like escape off the planet. It's going to be like the last two. Like maybe it's like the first one is them like trying to find some way out, and then the last one is them taking off, something like that.
I think all the storylines probably merge here in the last, because we're kind of split up into a few different spots right now between Deirdre Mira, between Luthen, Bix.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, we're just kind of split up all over the place. Probably comes to a head here at the end, but yeah. Also, I saw the theory. I don't know if you guys have seen this one, that Luthen's a Jedi.
Nah.
I've been out on most of these like kind of Star Wars-y theories, but that one, I don't know. It's got some legs. I wouldn't hate that.
I wouldn't be shocked if there was a Jedi somewhere.
I don't think it would be him, because I feel like, at least from Gilroy's standpoint, that would cheapen the effect of Luthen or cheapen the character of Luthen a lot. Because like the whole thing is that he's like a regular sort of dude, like a guy, or at least a guy that's like in a well-off point in society that's like doing all these things, like burning his life for all this shit. If he's a Jedi, he never had a choice, right? So like, because it's just like burned into his religion and like everything in his, every cell of his DNA. But this guy turned and he's staying on this course of destroying his own life for that sunrise he'll never see. So I think that they wouldn't do that.
Yeah, I think, actually, now that I think about it, I actually agree. Because the show has done so well at just avoiding, like, Jedis are just, they're a 1% of 1% of 1% of the population in the Star Wars universe. And it feels like they get focused on so much when there's the rebellion behind the scenes is made up almost entirely of just normal people like this. Oh, yeah, I agree with that, actually.
Luthen just takes out an injector full of midichlorians, turns himself into a force wielder. Oh, he does. Do you remember? It's funny. You just mentioned you mentioned him yesterday, Jeff, or the other day, League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. Do you remember the scene where the guy that Dr. Hyde is or whatever is fighting? He like just pours the shit all over his face and turns into a giant red monster. That's going to be Luthen. He's just going to like oh, Midichlor, you thought you had me cornered. And he's like turns into the fucking Hulk of force users. That's how you end this.
LXC.
Unlimited power.
Literally, yes.
That's Andor episode 10, episode 11 and 12, these next 2 weeks. Kind of crazy. That's a 3 a.m. show for me the rest of the way through. It would have been, but we just got the screeners early, which we did not get. We will be watching the last two.
Yeah, I'm happy to be back with the peasants. Mm-hmm.
With all you normals out there, we'll be watching it with you ahead at normal time. Next up, we'll do what we got to do, an ad read here. This episode of Lights, Camera, Barstool is presented by 3Chi. Maybe take some 3Chi after you stay up and watch Andor. Introducing the next evolution in pure cannabis products, Delta 9-0. I appreciate 3Chi too. There's always something new in terms of the name. Delta 9-0 sounds somehow significantly more intense than everything else they've had. By 3Chi. 3Chi Delta 9-0 products deliver a similar yet smoother and stronger, longer lasting euphoria compared to traditional marijuana products. High quality, federally legal hemp derived product raises the bar for what you should expect from a cannabis product in both effects and experience. Remember, this is not CBD. Get some 3Chi, but this is not CBD. This is not just some small little thing you're going to take. This is the real deal. You'll get high off this stuff. You'll feel great, relaxed. I'll get your exclusive 10% discount on all 3Chi premium THC products by going to 3Chi.com. That's the number 3CHI.com. Use promo code BARSTOOL10 for 10% off your order today. Must be 21 or older to purchase. Please use responsibly. Again, they got the oils, the tinctures. They got the food. They have Rice Krispies, brownies. The cookies are delicious. You could even take the powder, put it in some milk, and then dunk the 3Chi cookie in your 3Chi milk. Double 3Chi. Make sure to order 3Chi now. They're 9-0 products. Smoother, stronger lasting euphoria. Barstool 10 for 10% off your order. John Wick, Chapter 4. What a miss, by the way, calling Chapter 3 Parabellum was, by the way.
We looked it up. What meant something peace, Parabellum, right? Like, four
peace? Yeah, like, I feel like they did, like, I feel like they called it Parabellum, and then they were like, we should just call it Chapter 3. Because, like, the chapters work perfectly.
Exactly.
This was supposed to come out 2 years ago, but was delayed because of COVID. And then Keanu Reeves with The Matrix and everything. John Wick uncovers a path to defeating the High Table, but before he can earn his freedom, Wick must face off against a new enemy with powerful alliances across the globe and forces that turn old friends into foes. Keanu Reeves, Donnie Yen, Bill Skarsgård is that foe, a member of the High Table whose position is challenged by John Wick. Lawrence Fishburne back. Hiroki Sanada's in the movie. Trying to think who else is in this. Ian McShane back. Clancy Brown. Bridget Monaghan. Which means there's a pretty large connection, it seems, to John Wick's wife. It seems like that storyline comes back into play in this one. Trailer looks badass. Like, there's not even like, what do you say at this point anymore? It's just John Wick. Mm-hmm. Like, it's also, there was news that he's going to be in the spinoff.
Yes.
Yeah.
Keanu Reeves in the spinoff alongside Ana de Armas. I think it looks cool. And, you know, I think the big thing with this is my only concern would be, what's the storyline? We can't do the same shit over and over again. I like that it's kind of he's had the one-on-one face-off duel, but it seems like it's more of a buying of freedom rather than getting the mark off him. And I kind of like the way they did it. Again, he's had like the dual face-off thing before, but it seems a little more direct. Like that's the A to Z storyline with the Bill Skarsgård character.
Yeah. I think for this movie, the three things that excite me and should excite everyone with John Wick, I think in general, is that John Wick is probably the most consistent franchise running in the entirety of movies right now. Three movies, zero misses is like such a hard thing to do, and that they've done it. The action obviously is something that has like sparked a whole new wave of action movies, a lot of which were created by stuntmen. Another thing is that Keanu obviously takes this shit very seriously, and he makes sure that all the people that join in do as well. Like, you've seen those videos of like Halle Berry doing the training courses with him after the last movie, and it adds a lot to it. And for this movie, the cast that they added is awesome. Donnie Yen, martial arts movie goat right there. Haruyuki Sanada is also like, I think, a black belt in something. And Scott Adkins, sneakily one of the coolest action stars there is. Like, he does like a trillion B movies every year, but he's always just like this intense, super intense, like physical presence in every one of them. So we're going to see some really, really cool hand-to-hand combat, I think, throughout this fight or throughout this movie. They kind of set up, from what I saw anyway, there'd be some sort of conflict between Sanada and Donnie Yen's character. So I think we might get like a couple of storylines intersecting, which is pretty cool. So I think for this one, you definitely need to go off the beaten path of like, hey, you can't just do this again. You can't just do the same exact, like, hey, it's John Wick versus the Marquis or whatever Bill Skarsgård's name, character's name. Like, you can't just have that again. But at the same time, if it has worked through three movies, maybe you don't have to fix it. So I don't know, but I know that is that I'm super excited to watch it.
Yeah, I'll be honest. I don't care if it's more of the same. The same has been good. Like, I mean,
yeah,
you get a lot of the same in, like, let's say it, like, the MCU gives you a lot of the same over and over again. Rocky franchise gives you a lot of the same. Like, a lot of these big franchises do the same thing over and over again. And this does it really fucking well. What it's doing is fucking awesome. Like, it's just a very fun franchise. Now, I do think the lore is really cool. So I'm hoping they dive more into it, because they kind of tease it just here and there. They don't ever really fully commit to it. I'd love to see more of, what is it, the High Table, the Excommunicado, like Ian McShane's character, Winston. the hotel. Yeah, I mean, all that stuff's very interesting to me. I think it's a neat little universe that they've set up, so I'm actually excited for Ballerina, too. This looks great.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a little weird that the main villain, you guys stayed around for after the trailer, right? When they showed Matthew Perry, right?
Yes, absolutely. He's actually the Marquis.
I went back. I was looking. I was doing the. Actually, this is going to air afterwards. Not that anyone playing is listening to this. I'm using Keanu Reeves in our True Show that doesn't, as a celebrity mashup, where I mash up two celebrities' faces. I one time did Matthew Perry and Keanu Reeves. Like, I feel like I need to do a public apology to Keanu.
Caused
Reeves.
It.
Did you really?
I had a friend who read the book, and they said that the Matthew Perry book is one of the most fucking nonsense, like, out of his mind, like, douchey things they've ever read. They're like, just no accountability, complete
ass. You
asshole.
Know what I want to read is Brian Cox's one where he flamed everybody, because like, he's just a grumpy old man, and I can get behind that. Matthew Perry, not really.
There's another director that had a really, really funny one like that. Who was it? Was it Francis Ford Coppola?
So yeah, it must be him.
I think it was Coppola, where he just literally shits on every single director who's ever lived. He's going after Alfred Hitchcock.
Scorsese, this Scorsese rapscallion. This guy can't direct for shit.
John Wick's also. We got to talk about this. Keanu is 60 years old.
Mm-hmm.
How much longer can he do these John Wick movies?
Well, you know, I think helps, and I'm not saying he can't run. But his character just has permanent limps now. He's just always limping around. You can kind of get away with some of that which I'm not saying, again, I'm sure he could run fantastically, but that's kind of built into the character, I feel like.
You don't realize how old he is until he cut that fucking beard off, and then you're like, oh, he's really old.
For fucking Bill and Ted, man.
The best scene in the trailer, by the way, was that desert chase scene. The desert chase scene. That was fucking awesome.
I loved the katana when they were using the katana and the gun. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, I love that. What do they call it?
Gunkata.
Gunkata.
Yep. You said Marvel and like, you know, the Mission Impossibles, the Bonds that they do kind of retread. I think that the weird thing about John Wick, it's crazy to say, like you think back when you first saw the trailer, you're like, are you fucking kidding me?
Yeah.
Like this guy loses his dog. I have like an expectation now where I'm like, I don't ever want it to fall in line with like just being kind of, you know, me. Like I want him to keep upping the ante. Because they just continue to be great. It's kind of like landing three movies was nuts. Landing two was crazy. Then three, if they do four, like this is just one of the all-time movie success stories.
Exactly. Zero misses across four. And it's funny because those directors have gone on and had like other movies where it didn't have nearly as much success. But like they just with John Wick, that's their bread and butter.
Is Stahelski doing this one too?
I believe it's the two of them are involved again. Stahelski and
speaking of Marvel, I mean, Marvel fans are dying for Stahelski to come in and do like a Blade.
That'd be awesome.
I mean, it would be awesome, but I don't know.
They're reworking Blade, so we'll talk one Marvel thing that came out yesterday. That we'll talk about that when we talk Black Panther. Next up, Act Two, we're talking Indiana Jones, and this is presented by Rocket Money. Subscriptions. Very expensive. This is the time of year to be using Rocket Money, by the way. You know, you're buying Christmas gifts, Hanukkah gifts, Kwanzaa gifts, maybe some the fourth holiday I don't know about. You got to buy gifts. You got to spend more money in the wintertime, holiday season. Save some money. And I'm telling you, subscription services, that's the best way to save. The Rocket Money app shows all your subscriptions in one place and cancels what you don't want. Does it right there. Most Americans think they spend around $80 a month on subscriptions. They're actually spending $200 plus. Rocket Money can even find subscriptions you didn't know you were paying for, maybe paying double for something. I've said before on here, I paid for two Hulu accounts for like 2 years. To cancel a subscription, all you got to do is press cancel. That's it. Rocket Money takes care of the rest. It's not like, oh, hey, here it is. Now go find your password and go find this and go do this. Like, no, Rocket Money will do it for you. Cancel unnecessary subscriptions with Rocket Money today. Go to rocketmoney.com/lights. I could save you hundreds per year. Rocketmoney.com/lights. Scan, find out all the different things you're paying for. Have it canceled for you. That way you don't got to worry about it. Save some money this holiday season. Thank you to Rocket Money. Indiana Jones, Disney Plus series, reportedly will be a prequel focusing on Indy's mentor, Abner Ravenwood, Marion's father.
Much granddad. In the
franchise. This is a who is this according to, by the way?
I forget where I saw it too.
Steven Spielberg.
I want to make sure I credit the right company here. Variety called it an exclusive. Doesn't Variety get yelled at for calling things exclusive sometimes?
Yes. Yeah, Variety's they're like the I don't even know what to call them. They're just they get kind of shit on between Deadline and THR, the like the serious ones, and then there's Variety. Yeah.
Just swooping and being like exclusive via Deadline.
Obviously Harrison Ford's not going to be in this. He's done playing the character, though he is going to be in Marvel. I think we really talked about it on here, but he's playing Thunderbolt Ross, in the recast there, which is going to be maybe awesome, but maybe funny. I don't even know. cause you never know with him. Cause like he was great in The Force Awakens, but like Han can just be a character who doesn't give a shit. Anyway, apparently we're getting an indie trailer soon. Has to be Thanksgiving. Like, they said there's going to be a trailer coming out in the next 30 days. I would be stunned if it's not Thanksgiving. That seems like the perfect time. Like right during Thanksgiving football, all the old sitting down with their family, you know, you got to get them to the theater too. Just drop the Indy 5 trailer. I don't know how I feel about this. I hope it's good. It'd be kind of cool, but it's one of those things where you take Indy out. Is it Indy?
I'm at the point where I'm still excited for Indy 5 just because of James Mangold and his ability to do an incredible swan song for characters. At least that's proven with Logan. And I was happy for that. I don't want to have any more exploration of the Indiana Jones universe. If you want to make an adventure series, I say just go out, do your own IP. It's better to do that than to do something like Indiana Jones, because people are just going to, they're going to want to hate it, and you're going to have to climb. Like, it's great. Yeah, you get to use an existing IP, and it's going to like maybe help your awareness or help with your marketing and all that. But you also are going to have an insanely uphill battle with an extremely vaulted and revered franchise like that. So like, I don't see, for me as an Indiana Jones fan, the desire to go watch something that doesn't really involve Indiana Jones, or to really see it, anything that doesn't involve Harrison Ford. Like, go do something else. Go do a different property, do a different adventure series. We like, there's such a huge lack in those type of like TV shows and movies. So like, just go do one, and just by sort of the merit of you being the only one doing it, you'll likely be able to find an audience. So just like, that's kind of where I'm at with Indy in general. Very excited for Indy 5, but not so much for this.
Yeah.
The funny thing is they've done young Indy.
Yeah. The Indiana Jones Chronicles or whatever.
Indiana Jones Chronicles. So it's like, I don't know. Like, there's, at that point, why not just do that? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't get it.
I think we're all in agreement that the action adventure, like archaeologists, like that trope, it's fun. Like, it's something that is missing. Like, I love that genre of action adventure.
Even like Uncharted. Uncharted was a fun time because it's the same shit.
Exactly. What I was gonna say is they basically have two options of creating is they can either go back to the Indiana Jones well and do a spinoff like what they're doing, or they can make something new and it'll draw comparisons to Indiana Jones the same way Uncharted has or National Treasure did in some ways. But they chose this route, and I think I'm with you, Ken Jack. It's tough because it's just going to draw comparisons to what is the gold standard in action adventure films. Like, it's just tough. That's a character that is impossible to replicate or replace. Like, for all of Harrison Ford's faults, he loves playing Indiana Jones, and it shows, and that character is his favorite and a lot of people's favorite Harrison Ford character, and he's cool as hell, and I don't think there's anyone out there who's nearly charismatic or fits the bill enough to replace him. I wish they had done something new. Abner Ravenwood could be interesting. I don't know, because
Abner,
I mean, his time will be what? World War One will be like, I guess, the era they'll explore.
No,
it won't be World War II.
Even earlier than that, because Indiana Jones, like the first one takes place, I want to say in the early 30s or mid 30s or something like that. So maybe even,
I'm just going off. I got his IndianaJones.fandom.com page pulled up, and it says,
although World War One, it makes sense considering they do like that backdrop.
Yeah, I guess he started training Indy in like the early 20s.
Okay, perfect. So it's after that then.
Yeah, so they would lead in, I'm guessing, into him training Indy. That would be like right before them. Yeah, no, I mean, also Indiana Jones 5, I'm hearing all sorts of different things on that.
I'm still excited for it. I want it to be good so bad.
I hear that the whole movie is good and then the ending is getting mixed results and they keep trying different endings. But
it's tough one.
They can't... I know they can't come to a consensus.
To Mangold's credit, he found the perfect ending for Wolverine in Logan. So
I have full faith in Mangold. Mangold's a great studio director. Mm-hmm. I mean,
he just pulls out a gun and shoots Mutt Williams in the face.
That would get high. That would test high for sure.
Something tells me Shia LaBeouf's not going to make an appearance in this movie.
Yeah, for multiple reasons.
Probably not.
Also, is this Indiana Jones 5? Is it? I know it's supposed to be time travel, but this movie's going to take place in like the 70s, right?
I don't know. I mean, I guess they have to because Harrison Ford's old. Like, I don't know. Yeah. Last one was in the 50s.
Yeah. Every scene, it's someone going, Indy, you look like shit, man.
But they already did that in the last one, so I don't know if they... Oh, last one. So.
Indiana Jones beats up hippies for...
Yeah. He's sitting there, he's like the Woodstock, ordering everyone to open fire at Kent State.
I mean, I will say, He has aged, like, he really hasn't aged in the last,
he's like Sean Connery right now, ironically.
Yeah, he looks really good. That kind of is the only reason this works. Like, it's a miracle that he just still walks. Like, it's kind of crazy. The man crashes his fucking planes and shit. The Millennium Falcon door smashes his leg into pieces. Like, it's crazy.
I don't care. Mm-hmm. That's my low. Yeah. Can we play that really quick? Hold on.
Yeah, you're gonna have to. Can you? You're gonna have to share it.
Right.
Actually, let me hold on.
just tell me, Harrison. Did Greedo shoot first?
Oh my god. That was an interview with I think Collider.
Some British dude.
Oh god, I know I have the clip somewhere.
Here, I got it.
Time.
I don't care.
Wow, it's just him saying that.
Did you shoot Greedo first, or did Greedo shoot you first?
I don't care.
Not British. Very wrong about that.
Oh my god.
Fuck. I love him.
Just a beast.
That's Indiana Jones. Next up, presented by Freebird, we have an interview with Glenn Powell. He's in Devotion, a war movie with Jonathan Majors, which is releasing. Let me just tell you when it's releasing.
November, late November.
Weekend, Jack and I saw
can you guys ask him about something for me?
Shoot.
Can you ask him to set it up too?
People really did like that movie a lot.
I love that movie.
He's in this movie, comes out November 23rd, also in Top Gun, many other things as well that we love. Everybody wants him, all that stuff. He's a big Richard Linklater guy, Spy Kids.
Expendables 2.
James Bond.
Here's an interview with Freebird. Did you know that most bald people are shaving their head wrong? I actually didn't know that.
You'll never have to know that, Jeff. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, you never know, though. I feel like we talk about it so much.
I want to hear this. What's the right one?
They're using the same multi-blade razor that they also use on their face. Maybe their balls, too. I don't know.
Don't do that.
This doesn't tell me if this has to be a PG or PG-13 or rated R ad read. So we're either going to get yelled at for me saying that or not. But razor designed to shave flat surfaces, not curved domes. Avoid painful nicks, cuts, irritation by getting a shaver actually designed for the top of your head. If you're trying to Lex Luthor it. Bald head shavers need the Flex Series electric rotary shaver from Freebird. With 5 rotary blades that individually flex to the head's curvature, you'll get the closest shave of your life in minutes. That was always a satisfying commercial. I feel like we don't see those these days. On TV, we're like the couple blades kind of like mold to your face when you're shaving.
I haven't seen that, yeah.
I feel like that was back before. That was like when we were kids, I feel like. You saw it more. And back when we didn't shave. And now we don't.
That's true.
We get that. Plus, compared to traditional manual razors, the Flex Series shaves 50% more hair in a single stroke. For the upcoming holiday seasons, birthdays, maybe just because, but especially holidays, get yourself or someone you love the best shaver of your life. Freebird, previously Freedom Grooming, is giving you an exclusive discount. Visit myfreebird.com/LCB for 20% off. That's myfreebird.com/LCB for 20% off. Stocking stuffer, maybe a regular gift, shave the top of your head, whatever. Freebird is the way to go for those shaving needs. Freebird, myfreebird.com/LCB for 20% off today. Here's our interview with Glenn Powell. All right. We are joined for the first time. I for some reason, thought we may have talked to you for set it up, but we did not. So for the first time, we have Glenn Powell on this podcast, Mr. Fighter Pilot himself now, which we'll get into. I don't know if you've just been typecast. You're just going to fly jets the rest of your life now, but
worse things.
So yeah, you know, I got to say, don't knock it till you've tried it. Fighter jets are a fun world to play in.
I might take your word for it and just never get in one. Devotion though, Glenn Powell joining us. True story revolves around elite fighter pilots who became the U.S. Navy's most celebrated wingmen during the Korean War. We have seen it, but this is out November 23rd. Make sure to check it out. It's that time of year, Thanksgiving season, meaning it's movie season as we wrap up 2022. We'll also obviously talk Top Gun and many other things as well. We may have a bit of a an Austin connection here, like a really. Oh. Similar Austin connection. Actually, you and I went to high school at the same time in the same area.
Wait, where'd you go to high school?
I graduated Cedar Park in 2009.
No way.
Yeah.
Dude. Wait, so we probably did you play any sports there?
I played golf. All my buddies played football though. So
oh, that's awesome, man. Yeah, Cedar Park. That you guys had that was a fun school.
We for those who, I mean, Glenn went to Westwood, so we were like same district. Crazy.
Same district. Cedar Park had a lot more going on. I really enjoyed Westwood. More of a math science magnet. Lot less fun.
STEM school.
Yeah, Cedar Park just had, you know, better style, more fun, you know. The nightlife was popping off at Cedar Park.
Yes, yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So yeah, we had that Austin connection.
Dude, that's wild, man. That's
crazy.
We never crossed paths.
We did not. We'll go to Pluckers or Whataburger next time we're both in Austin.
Let's do it.
Devotion, though. Fucking awesome movie, but this is the year of the fighter pilot for you. Obviously with COVID delayed movie stuff, like, was this just like circumstance that you're doing two movies, very different movies, but like in terms of your characters, it's kind of crazy, right?
Yeah, it's pretty wild. I mean, so the weird way it's all worked out is that I actually developed Devotion about 5 years ago, right? Almost, maybe even six. So found the book, you know, put all the pieces together, got, you know, the producers on board, the director and Jonathan Majors. And we all, you know, it all kind of coalesced at a time that was actually before Top Gun. And so I actually had to make the decision whether I was going to do Top Gun or Devotion at one point. And I talked to Cruise about it, and Cruise was like, you can do both. Cause I was like, and so it all worked out that I got to shoot Top Gun and then use a lot of that technology, a lot of the things I learned on that movie, and put it all into Devotion. So, and then just the fact that they're coming out in the same year is, you know, it looks a little suspicious. It looks like I don't know how to do anything other than fly a plane, but I get it.
This is obviously based on a true story. Were there any nerves for you sort of making sure that's an accurate character? Cause you've also done this before with like Hidden Figures, but with a similar sort of, I would say also a pilot character. That's a weird coincidence as well. But the nerves of doing just like a true story versus a like sort of crazed semi-soft reboot with like Top Gun or something like that.
Yeah.
It's obviously way more serious.
Yeah. You know, the hard part when you're playing somebody real is that you have their family, you have them, you have to kind of like portray someone's legacy. And there's like just a little bit of difference in pressure. And I think developing Devotion, I met the Brown family, I met the Hudner family. I had to make promises to both of them that this was going to be great and we're going to make it at the highest level. So I had to shake a lot of hands and make a lot of promises to get this one made. So that definitely weighed on me while we were shooting, you know, to play a character and play it right. You get one chance to tell the story. It definitely, I definitely felt the pressure. I was definitely sweating while we were making this movie.
Yeah, I can imagine. I'd love to know how they did the, because you mentioned like taking some of the lessons from Top Gun and using them in this as well. I would love to know how they filmed some of the fighter scenes, just because I know you had the same aerial stunt coordinator
as
Top Gun, right? And I read also how J.D. Dillard was very committed to the practical effects and was like used a lot of very real fighters and mocks them up to be to look like other fighter jets, which is awesome as well. Just like how you filmed all those fighter scenes, though.
So the crazy part is on, you know, learning this from Tom Cruise is like when you get something in camera, it just looks different. Like the audience actually knows the difference between CGI and practical effects. And you can see it on people. Like when you're interacting with the environment, when Tom Cruise is on the side of, what is it, the Burj Khalifa or whatever, it's like, or he's hanging on the side of a plane, you know, that's Tom Cruise, right? And there's something about when you're putting all these planes together and actually capturing them in real space, in real time, through real clouds, pulling these real bombing runs 5 to 10 feet off the water. It's like you're seeing how the plane interacts with snow and water. It's like it's just a different deal. So the lessons I learned on Top Gun were, if you can shoot it practically, shoot it practically. The thing that made Devotion really difficult is that we had to pull all these planes. We didn't have a flight line from the Navy with all these badass $80 million planes sitting there. We had to pull these planes from collectors and convince them to paint them in 1950s and get pilots that knew how to fly these things in such close proximity. There's even a helicopter I fly in the movie that it's so old. It's the oldest helicopter in the world that we had to pull a piece from the Smithsonian to make it fly.
I've read about that, which is crazy. It's like one of those helicopters left or something.
One of one. And literally the pilots that were around were like, that's the most dangerous stunt in the whole movie. this thing should not be flying. But the really cool part is that the assembling of all those planes, these old warbirds, you know, Corsairs, Sky Raiders, Bearcats, Sea Furies, all these like old planes that you're just pulling them from collectors and repainting them. It was really cool. And you have to paint them and age them and make them fly unbelievably close and kind of push the limits of these planes. Like there was this one shot in the movie where I think I'm flying like 10 feet. I'm flying with this guy named Steve Hinton, who is one of the pilots I flew with on Top Gun and one of the best pilots in the whole world. And our canopy is like 10 feet off this lighthouse. We're just trying to get it in camera. And it's just, it was pretty dangerous. I mean, it's like between Top Gun and Devotion, I definitely have maxed out some what, you know, the airworthiness of all these planes.
Which is funny too, because that is a plot point in the movie where like your pilots are learning how to fly Corsairs and like it's a struggle because of how much of the profile on the nose is, it's kind of funny. That kind of mirrored real life with your movie.
Yeah. For these planes to do what they had to do in terms of, you know, the speed that they're flying it and how dynamic what they had to do practically in combat, the prop had to be so big that the nose of the plane literally has to be oriented up. So you have to trust the LSO to land it. You're literally flying blind. So flying these things, very few people fly a Corsair because it's a really heavy airplane and you're flying with like no visibility. So I will say those planes are, it's a little scary. You know, it's very different. It's a different animal. And especially when these things are old, you know, old airplanes, I'm a pilot myself. I've been flying around quite a bit. And when you fly in these old airplanes, it freaks you out a little bit. You know, you feel, you know, when you're pulling all these maneuvers and you can feel the thing groaning and really kind of stretching, yeah. it feels different, you know, tightens things up. You didn't know it could tighten.
On more of like the acting side of things, there was a lot of really emotional moments, especially in the third act of this movie that you had with both Jonathan Majors and Christina Jackson. Are those like just exhausting to record because they seem like emotionally devastating for everyone involved?
Yeah, I think that was that was always kind of a concern of mine is when I met the real Tom Hudner, this guy. So, you know, the real Tom Hudner, you know, obviously the guy I'm playing the movie, he won the Medal of Honor for some of the stuff he did in this one event in the Korean War. But what I realized is he was given the Medal of Honor for this thing, but he kind of kept all these things because a tragedy was involved in getting that medal. He kept all this stuff in his basement. It was like his whole life was defined by this one thing that, you know, losing the friend in the process of getting this medal is sort of this weird irony and terrible thing in the movie. But in that scene with Christina Jackson, where I wear the Medal of Honor, I'm wearing Tom Hudner's real Medal of Honor.
Really?
Real Medal of Honor he got, you know, in 1951 from Truman. I'm wearing that medal in the scene.
That's and crazy.
The guy behind me is his son. So it's like, it was really cool to be able to, cause we got the Brown family in the movie. We got the Hudner family in the movie and it really was made with these two families. So there's a lot of stuff like that. The booklet, the logbook that I have in the movie is Tom Hudner's real logbook.
That's insane.
It's just really, really cool stuff like that. But it was this thing was made with a different level of, TLC, you know, than any other movie I've ever seen.
Were you ever like, are you sure you want me to use, like,
we can use a prop. It's okay.
Yeah. You know, that's the other thing is that I actually didn't expect in that scene towards the end where I'm wearing the real Medal of Honor, you know, wearing a prop and then like wearing the real thing. I actually didn't, the emotional weight of wearing somebody's real medal, like you kind of can't describe it, you know, when you're just like, okay, this is a prop that some guy in a prop class made versus this is a medal that Harry Truman gave this guy. This is the thing that defined his life. Like it just sort of contextualizes the whole story. When you have those real things that you can like feel in a movie, it's just kind of, it's hard to imagine. But yeah, I was very careful with the Medal of Honor. Very careful.
We got to talk about Jonathan Majors. Where in the Creed 3 process, where he is now the biggest person, and he is like almost the Rock territory now. Where was he in his Creed 3 training when you were doing this movie?
He was, I mean, look, Majors is, you know, Majors was like a, like he boxed, like he legitimately boxed for a while. The guy's an animal. He was always, there's one scene in the movie where he like kind of, I think he's in like a tank. I mean, you don't expect it because we're on flight suits, so you can't really see what anybody looks like on that thing, but he took it off and you're like, okay, guy's got pipes, you know, so it's distracting. But then when, after we wrapped the movie, he went into Creed zone, and that dude, I mean, I don't know if you saw him on the Men's Health cover.
Oh yeah.
That's just
guys like, you know, I thought I was competitive and I thought I worked hard, but that guy's like a different, he's a different breed. He's the best. You guys would love, have you guys talked to Majors?
We've not.
No, we haven't actually yet. No.
You would love him. Yeah. He's just the man. But like, yeah, you look at the Wakanda trailers. I think he's at 3 trailers before Wakanda.
Mm. Yes. Because yeah, you guys Creed 3 and then Ant-Man. Yeah.
Yeah. He's got Creed and then Devotion. Yeah.
I mean, he's the new big bad. He's the new Thanos.
He is badass. Yeah. Yeah. The guy is like, you know how everybody's always like, okay, the next whatever. It's like, I've never could say with more confidence that he's going to be around for a very long time. Like this guy, he is so focused. He's so good at his job. But I mean, he takes it. I take it seriously. This guy really, I mean, he's made of something else. It's wild.
That mirror scene where they do, I don't know how they did this from a camera perspective either, where they do the zoom all the way around and like, yeah, it almost reminded me of like the Terminator 2 thing they did with like Linda Hamilton's twin or whatever. It was crazy.
That's the other thing that makes that scene really incredible is if you think about on the filmmaking side, there's the scene in the mirror where he's talking to himself in the mirror and kind of basically saying all the most hurtful things that anyone's ever said to him in the mirror. And it's a really powerful scene, but on a filmmaking side, they had to have a wall that was movable. So that shot is done. So there's an entire crew moving a wall around while he's saying those things directly into lens and camera so that when you move around, it's in the mirror.
And crying too during this too. And that was a long take.
It's a long, I mean, it's all a oneer. It's all a oneer. And he, I watched him do it like 5 times in a row, consistently visceral every time, but was doing it in the middle of a serious filmmaking stunt. He kept that focus. That's what I'm saying, is like, that's what makes him so different, is he's just, his focus and his intensity is like nothing I've ever seen before. But yeah, I'm proud of him. I'm proud to share the screen with that guy.
Devotion, make sure to check it out next week. It has that thing, and we'll roll and talk. We got to talk a little Top Gun. It's that same feeling where you see something and you just talked about it. You talked about the practical. You talked about how real it feels and looks. And Top Gun had that too, where you have people talking about practical stuff who probably wouldn't, like, you know, like we're like, we love movies, you know, we'll notice anything. But like, it was people who would, you know, maybe go see 2-3 movies a year and they're like, that looks so damn real. At what point with Top Gun, and it's probably different for you, you're on the set, you know, we're on the other side, we don't know, we only hear like, you know, delays, cruises, thing, this, that. Like, at what point for you in the process where you're like, this is going to be pretty fucking big, this is going to be a huge deal?
Look, I mean, you go into that process assuming it's going, I mean, there was a lot of anticipation, a lot of pressure on to do it right. However, in the middle of making that movie, there's also so many moving pieces and you're shooting things and reshooting them and trying to figure it out. I didn't know if it was going to be good. Like, you just kind of trust Tom Cruise's taste, right? You just have to kind of, Tom Cruise, Joe Kaczynski, Chris McCrory, Eddie Hamilton, Jerry Bruckheimer, it's like all these people, you have to kind of go, okay, these guys know how to make movies and make them well. However, it wasn't until I saw it during the pandemic, like it was right, the pandemic started, Cruise shows us the movie, we go to Paramount, we're all kind of spread out in this big theater with our masks on, and we watch this movie, and I like, the, you know, lights came up, and I was like, I think that's pretty freaking good. Like, I think that's a pretty good, you know, and because like every movie I've ever seen of mine, I pretty much hate it the first time I see it. Like, it's just, it's just part of who I am. I have to hate myself before I get past, you know, the fact that I've ruined this entire movie. But on Top Gun, I was like, okay, this movie's, I think, going to deliver. Cause it's just, it's just like something you've never seen before in terms of the way we shot it. And Cruz really changed my perspective on how movies are made and how audiences interact with it. You know what I mean? Because the thing that he taught me is like, if the audience knows you're actually in danger, if the audience knows that you're putting your skin in the game, there's just something different there. Like there's a different level of audience engagement. And the fact that we were in the back of real jets, we're flying low level through these canyons and, you know, we're making these pilots do things that they've never done before, much less on camera with, you know, camera ships all around them. I mean, it's a pretty dangerous thing. And the fact that we got through it, everybody was safe, and it's like a ride of a lifetime. It's kind of why you make movies. So it's just, I'm just very grateful I got to do the Tom Cruise of filmmaking because it's affecting everything I'm doing now.
Well, I mean, I've said we're big Oscar people. If this doesn't get a Best Picture nomination, I might be done with the Oscars. But
I feel the same way, dude. I feel the same.
Cruise
deserves watching Cruise go to war every day to make this movie. I'm just like, that guy deserves I've never seen, again, I work really hard. Cruise is a different level, and he put, I'm getting my ass kicked flying two times a day. He was flying three, four times a day because he's having to fly against all of us. Mm-hmm. And all these trains. It's just, he's made of something else. It's just,
what crazy. Is that presence like though? Cause like, and what we love, like we're such big theater guys, Kendra, we yeah. love going yeah. to the theater, and he's like the best leader for like movies and theaters. Like you're yeah. like, hey, like let's go. Yeah. He sees every movie. But what is his presence like though? Like just on set? Like I can't, I feel like on our end, it's nothing I can even imagine.
Mm-hmm. It's game time. You know, it, look, he's a good time. Like I talk to Cruz all the time. Like even this movie I just finished, you know, I'd call him and ask him advice and questions and stuff like that. But on set, it's focus. It's game time. We're there for a job. You know, every actor approaches things differently, but the you know, slapping each other on the back and high five, and that's meant for the press tour. When you're shooting a movie, it's you're in it. You're in the trenches together. But it's that level of focus that not only makes sure you make a good movie, but also keeps people safe. Like I don't want the guy that's like enjoying it too much while I'm flying, you know, when I'm scraping paint with another jet. Like I don't want that.
A little bit too dangerous. after the movie, and I love the character of Hangman and Rooster, obviously, but after the movie, I think the one thing I said when we reviewed it, I was like, I think I might have liked if Glenn Powell was Rooster and Miles Teller was Hangman, because I was just like, there's something about like, just maybe because I had watched Whiplash and like his level of like, if he was an angry versus a snobby version of Hangman, and then like, you were that different version of Rooster, it would, I don't know. But do you think you could have pulled off the role of Rooster if asked?
Yeah, I think that, you know, the fun part about that, the how that all kind of came together is like, you know, I think I was hesitant on doing the movie in general because I, as an actor in this town, you have to have sort of an unimpeachable belief in yourself. You know, people throw a lot of rocks. It's a tough town, and you really do have to believe in yourself to a degree. When you see the movie and you see what Miles brought to it, it's like, I could have played that role. It would have been a very different sort of thing. Like my take on the role was just different. But at the same time, like I've just, what Miles does with that role, I think it just works. Like, and it's just effortlessly him. And it just, and also like, it's kind of chilling when you see he just is Goose, you know what I mean? Like it's just I think that's the really cool part is when he walked out with his mustache and kind of the vibe, like he's just so Anthony Edwards in the original, and just that it works in a way that I don't think it would have, it would have worked with me. So I think it all works out the way it's supposed to. And that's the other thing is the things you get, the things you don't get in this town end up being blessings. And I'm really happy I'm Hangman. And that movie's changed my life. So, and it's been great to be friends with Miles, you know, on and off screen.
Before we get into our final rapid fire thing here, we talked Austin at the top. You're in Everybody Wants Some, which is one of the better comedies. Talk about a different type of movie. Everybody Wants Some compared to Devotion, Top Gun. How was that for you though? Because it's a spiritual successor to Dazed and Confused, which as a fellow Austinite, it's just such an Austin movie, and for so many reasons, for the people in it, for the catchphrase and everything. Was that kind of special for you, especially because you went to high school in Austin, you grew up there, like, oh shit, I got to do a Richard Linklater Austin like spiritual successor to Dazed and Confused.
That movie, I mean, by the way, thank you guys for loving that movie, because like
we talk about it all the time.
Yeah,
we've interviewed Zoe, we've interviewed Wyatt Russell. We've interviewed a bunch of people from that movie at this point now.
I mean, they're both so good in that movie. It's so I was actually talking with Rick Linklater, because that's the movie I just finished that we just wrote, and I wrote and starred in that movie with him for him, and it's really good. But we shared so many Everybody Wants Them stories. And then we were talking about Wyatt on that one scene where he's doing like the naked yoga in the room. And like Wyatt, that was like totally a random impromptu thing he asked for on the day. Like he was just like, hey, do you mind if I wear a cock sock and do yoga? And Rick's like, sure, whatever, man. but that movie, I don't know if it will ever be replaced in terms of the specialness of making it. Because every single one of those guys I just love, including Zoe. And Rick is just such a special filmmaker. He's a guy that I've known since I was 14 years old. So we just finished our fourth movie together. And you know, Everybody Wants Him, I think, was our second. And it's just to be in the trenches with that guy is unbeatable. But also just the quality of like living in 1980 and like partying in Austin and showing all those guys like the my home turf. Like I really did feel like Finnegan was sort of the guy that does that in the movie, but also in real life, I got to show these guys all my spots and to tear up Austin. One of the funniest stories that was like Rick and I were just laughing so hard about the other day is we went to Blue Hole. Do you remember? You know Blue Hole, right, Jeff?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. So we go to Blue Hole. There's that scene where we're jumping off of the trees into the water and all that stuff. So we jump off, you know. Everybody does all that stuff. And we basically all put on white robes and get in this van, this little white van. And we're going to the next location, but we're all kind of soaked and everybody's got mustaches and sideburns and the whole thing. And we pull up to this light and there's this like attractive girl next to us at the light, but we're in like a blacked out like van. And one of the guys is like, dude, like that girl's so hot, like open the door. So we, we open the sliding door and this girl looks over and there's an entire van of like wet guys with mustaches, long hair and robes. And the girl literally ran the light. And Rick and I were just talking about it. It's like because also as you walk around Austin, you're going out with all these guys. We're all wearing mustache. Like we all look like we're out of an era. Like, are you guys part of a mustache club? Like what's going on? We all
so Austin. Yeah.
Yeah. But it's just that was just a blast. It's also that time in your life in which making movies, I just love making movies more than anything, but to make movies with that gang at that point in our lives where everybody's got kids and, you know, people are getting married and all that stuff. But there was like this one time in our lives where, you know, it's a very special time. It's what it feels like to go to college again, you know. Mm.
All right, we got one last thing we got to show you before we let you go. We have to ask every actor.
This is pressure because we got the rapid fire get out of here. But so just a lot of pressure on this one.
Yeah. So we got to show you something. We do this with everyone who has ever worked with Tom Cruise. I want to see this is what I hate about Zoom is that I need to like switch.
There it is.
Jeff, can you put it open? You got it. We got to show this to everybody who's ever worked with Tom Cruise. Is this his real ass? This is a screenshot from the 2008 movie Valkyrie.
I haven't like really sat for an entire afternoon looking at it, but that does not feel like what I've grown to know.
We've asked, you're like number like 40 we've asked, by the way. This isn't like we have asked from so Michelle Monaghan from Mission Impossible. Like we've asked everybody.
What did Michelle say?
I forget what she was
very
like
taken aback. I think she said that, no way.
Yeah, she's like, that's no, not a chance. And she's been with him on how many movies? Like an insane amount.
Yeah, I mean, the dude's in great shape.
Runs a lot.
That's a very specific. I'll tell you my take on that. My take on that is when you're doing certain stunts in movies, sometimes they reinforce, like you'll notice like, oh, that guy's knees look a little bigger than normal. It's like, oh, that guy's going to have to fall on his knees 50 times today, falling off a roof. They're just kind of reinforcing stuff. I'm not sure why you'd reinforce a person's ass like that, but
we're getting to the bottom of this one day.
What was that?
We're going to get to the bottom of this one day. That's all I'm going
to
say.
You're going to get to the bottom.
Yeah, literally.
Yes. That's a very confusing screenshot. Is that framed somewhere in your office? Is that what? Why
it should be. It really should be. You're right about that.
We'll make sure it shares with you on social so you can take a better look. But yeah, we're going to yell that we got to wrap. But thank you so much. This was a fellow Austin. This is awesome. Yeah, see Devotion November 23rd in theaters.
Good ass movie.
See it.
Amazing, guys. So much, this was fun. Let's do it again. And such a big fan of everything you guys do.
Absolutely. Thank you very much, man. Thank you.
Of course. See you later, man.
Take it easy.
All right. Thank you to Glenn Powell. Good stuff from Glenn Powell. Gooch is telling us they're airing Andor on, this is just announced,
the 23rd, 24th, and 25th. They'll rotate channels. But on Thanksgiving Day, I guess that's the 23rd Thanksgiving Day, right? So that's the first day. That's the first day they're doing it. And they're doing it on ABC. That's pretty cool.
Nuts. I'm gonna watch it on Freeform.
I miss ABC.
Interesting. Available on Hulu. Freeform changes their logo too. Here we go. Black Panther: Wakanda Forever.
Nice. Hell yeah. You look like what's his name? Bill, fuck, god damn it, ringer, who's the ringer? Bill Simmons. There it is.
Amanda Dobbins.
Yeah, Bill Simmons, the Wakandan forever.
Also, before, someone did do that in my theater, and it was a white woman wearing a beret. She looks like Patty Harrison's character from the Charlie Brown skit.
That's like what's her name from Not Okay.
Yes, it literally was.
Directed once again by Ryan Coogler. He directed the first one. Little over 2 hours and 40 minutes long. Queen Ramonda, Shuri, M'Baku, Okoye, and the Dora Milaje fight to protect their nation from intervening world powers in the wake of King T'Challa's death. As the Wakandans strive to embrace their next chapter, the heroes must band together with the help of Everett Ross, a new character. Riri Williams, who we'll get into, plays Ironheart, which is also a spin-off series of this movie that will be on Disney Plus next year, as they forge a new path and protect the Kingdom of Wakanda from our new villain, played by Tenoch Huerta, who plays Namor.
Namor.
And the...
The one who is not Tolokans. Loved.
That was like a... That makes sense. Mm.
Does make sense. Namor, the submariner, the kingdom of Atlantis in the comics, but a lot of what they're doing with Namor is to separate him from Aquaman. They don't want the, which is kind of funny because we just watched Black Adam. We're like, the characters were just the Marvel characters that we know, which again, they're from the comics. I'm not saying they just copied them, but like, it's kind of like Marvel is really trying to make people not think they're watching Aquaman and think they're watching a separate character, which they did a good job separating that, at least, even though there are some similarities. Spoiler-free review of the sequel to Black Panther. I loved this movie. This was, I mean, I get it. I've been saying it for a while. I would have been surprised this movie stunk. I think there were a lot of people who doubted that this movie was going to be good pretty much right away. When Chadwick Boseman passed and they announced they were continuing to do it and they weren't going to be a Black Panther in it and all that, or the T'Challa was not going to be in it. I don't know. I think he's too good of a director. He has too good of a track record to think that this wouldn't have been at least solid, but I think this ended up being really good. And the one thing that kind of brings it down a little bit, and I give him giving a very high mark. I think this is excellent. I think it's some of the best looking stuff we've seen in Marvel in a while. It's very well written, very well acted. There's one role in particular that I thought was incredible. It was Angela Bassett as Queen Ramonda. I thought she was fucking great. Very powerful performances, and a lot of that has to do, obviously, as well. It's a very unfortunate real world thing that sparks their performances. Like, they literally lost. It's a very surreal, weird experience at times. I'm sure you guys agree with that. Like, because he G literally died. Like it's a very odd feeling watching this movie, but it's incredibly respectful, very well done. The only thing that I think I'd say maybe like a little negative is, and I'm not even sure it's like their fault. There was clearly a story here before his death, and they didn't want to fully scrap it. They've really talked about that. So it gets a little bloated in spots, but, and we'll talk more about it. Like, I feel like if you really had Ryan Coogler break it down, like how much do you strip out from the original and then you're just making like a tribute movie, which they wanted to kind of do both. And I think in some spots it makes it a little bloated, but in the parts that matter, I think it's just some of the best stuff Marvel's done. I love Namor. I thought he was a fucking awesome villain. His motivations were great. I think I won't spoil, so I'll just keep it at that. But I really liked Black Panther Wakanda Forever. 89 out of 100 for me, and it does land in my top 10 Marvel movies. It lands at number 10 behind Spider-Man Homecoming. This was a very cool experience. If you've lost anyone in your life recently or at all, good luck seeing this movie. It is an emotional fucking movie. Pretty impressive they pulled it off, but still kept a lot of like the charm of Marvel at the same time too.
Yeah. So like obviously they, like you're saying, they had to change a lot, probably like almost everything about this movie. Because if they took that traditional Marvel movie route, people would be like rightfully very pissed off. Like you can't be doing like the, well, that just happened, like joke shit in a Chadwick Boseman's like farewell to the, or not really farewell to the character, but you know what I mean. So like the movie is like super emotional and like riddled with grief and how people process grief. And I think that change was risky, but it worked. And I think they earned the degree of emotion that they like evoked to a degree. There's definitely problems with the movie that I wouldn't say was bloated, because like I left the movie theater and people, they were like tweeting like, oh, how do you feel about the length or whatever? And I'm just like, I can't think of scenes where I'd be like, that should have gone, like that scene could have went and the movie would be fine. Like every scene I was just like this fits in the movie, it helps whatever progress. So I can't really think of anything there. But there's some other issues with it. I think my biggest complaint with the movie, and this is what I tweeted right after two, I think, is just that I think Goranson's score in the first Black Panther is the best in the MCU, and it really elevated everything about that movie. In this movie, I feel like it's not even close to the same level as he was in the first one. And I think if it was on that level of Black Panther, it would have made every single moment hit like 100 times harder. But this one, I really think it kind of stunk. Like it was, and like maybe that's just because it's relative to his other work, which is so great. But like, it had the soundtrack was almost a character in the first movie. And like, it really had no part to play in this one, which is whatever. And other than that, like, what's her name? Lilita Wright as Shuri. I'm not like sold on. Yeah. I'm not like totally sold on with her. Interesting. And I have some like other issues too, but like, I think mostly that revolve around the movie's main, like if you strip down all the dressing or whatever, the bones of this movie are incredibly similar to the bones of Black Panther 1. It's almost like the same plot points. Like the villain in Namor is basically the same thing as Killmonger as far as like the 3D motivations of the character. You know, they lose Wakanda, they have to leave, they come back. Like all that shit is very similar to the original. So like that I understand, especially when you need to like strip everything down and change it because of what happened. But like I think liked it if they had a little bit of like they switched things up a little bit. You know what I mean? Like changed up the bare bones of the plot a little bit more. But other than that, again, the grief and the emotion in this movie, I think they navigated that so well. And to do that sort of massive change to a movie and still have it be the successful as it was amazing. Lupita Nyong'o, incredible. Like you were saying, Angela Bassett crushed it. She has one of my favorite Marvel scenes when in the beginning at that UN meeting or whatever it was. Like that is an awesome fucking scene. The scene which was displayed in the trailers where she talks about losing everyone she loved. Like that scene was incredible. A lot of really, really great moments and a really solid ending and final credit. So yeah, really liked it. I landed on an 88.
The throne room monologue was in the trailer, but somehow, like, even knowing that, I've heard that a million times, because that first Wakanda Forever trailer is, like, probably Marvel's best trailer, I think. It's just unbelievably well done. The monologue hit just as hard. when you see it in the movie. It's like fucking powerful. And also you have the context of who she's talking to, which makes it even like, as I guess Miles, I thought she was talking to like, on like a video conference, like the UN or something. Like, I didn't know. It's so, like, who she's talking to makes it significantly more impactful. Gooch, will go to you next. But, like, I think bloated maybe wasn't even the right word. I think that's a good point that you make. Cause like, I didn't even know what I would strip out, but it's like, it's almost for me. Cause I don't know if I agree with you on Gore and said, I do like Letitia Wright in this, which she was all the hubbub about this movie because of her anti-vax stances and stuff. But it's like you almost can't, like, it's odd. I said, like there's a couple things, like maybe that it didn't drag it. You're like, all right, we're getting to a lot of things, but they kind of had to leave it in there. Like it was weird because of the fact that they're doing two different stories that I didn't expect to do given just horrible circumstances. It's interesting. It's kind of an interesting movie to like thoroughly break down. Gooch, thoughts?
I am a little bit lower on this than you all. I think there's a lot of great stuff here. It's a very varied movie. I think there's a lot of great stuff. And I think where they started is great. Like, I think the two main themes being explored are fantastic. Like the idea of how you process grief. What does that look like? I think that's really well done. And I think the first 20 minutes is probably the strongest part of the movie. I'm not sure how you all feel. I also think the idea of like allyship between, you know, minorities is a very, very interesting theme to explore, like the allyship between Latin American people and Black people. It's really well done. That's where Coogler, I think, is at his strongest, is when he explores those themes and he brings these heavy themes and he translates them into a big studio film. Now, where it falls off is, I think, a lot of the Marvel stuff. Like the MCU stuff, I think, really takes away from the messaging and the powerful performances throughout. I think it's extremely bloated. I think there's a lot I would have taken out. I don't think it particularly looks great at points. I think it hits that same issue that the first Black Panther had, where the final fight just doesn't look good. It looks out of place.
I thought it looked way better because that final fight in Black Panther is like one of the worst things ever.
It looks better than that, but that's a very low bar to clear.
Yeah, that's true. It is a very, like, them. I love Black Panther. Them falling down the fucking
the
mine or the shaft.
The rhinos.
Look like Gumby.
And I think I'm with you. I think Angela Bassett was incredibly strong. I think Lupita Nyong'o, every time she was on screen, stealing the show. She also looked incredibly good in that suit. Got to come out and say that. Tenoch, very surprising performance. Just because I'm not familiar with him.
He got the introducing label. No one is.
Very charismatic when he was on screen. I mean, very, very charismatic. But we'll get more into it during spoilers. I just feel like there's a lot you could cut from here, and it would have benefited the movie greatly, especially in the final act, because it would have given more time for things to breathe, more time for things to develop, especially in relation to Shuri's character. And we'll talk about it, but I'm landing at a 77. So that's where I'm at. It's not a bad movie. It's a good movie. And it has a lot of great parts, but there's a lot that I would have liked to see change.
Mm-hmm. Spoilers now for Black Panther: Wakanda Forever. Skip ahead if you've not seen it. I think one of the storylines that I think like a lot of the Everett Ross stuff, and I think a lot of the maybe like seems like that was tweaked a little bit. I don't know if he had passed before the movie was developed. I don't know if Riri Williams would have made it in the movie, and I think she fits well in the movie. I think she's a very good companion piece for Letitia Wright's character. Like, I think she brings a nice little, like, she gives the grounded element to the movie. Because obviously Wakanda is such an otherworldly thing. And then obviously, by the way, my theater, fucking thumbs down for my theater. Not enough of a crowd pop when they called Namor Mutant.
Yep.
Not enough. There should have been more. There was like a little bit, but I was like, oh yeah, let's go. Mutants. Like, they just straight up say it. So that added that. The thing that I appreciate most about this, I love the ending with Namor. I think that is what kind of makes the movie for me. I love a Marvel movie, they don't kill off the villain. Like, I love when they keep him around, when there's an extra motivation. And I think even when they maybe you try to do that, there isn't a ton of extra motivation. You're like, they're really just trying to keep this guy around. Like, there's like, I love his explanation to his fellow like Tolokans there. He's like, look, like they're gonna need us like at some point. They're gonna come for them at some point. one point or another, they're going to need us. And I just like that we keep him there. It feels earned. It feels like what you see him go through throughout the movie. They get really like pretty deep into his backstory about like how he is, who he is and all that. Like that felt earned and justified to me. That made me like it more. It made all the scenes and the moments in hindsight matter more to me.
I think
for that character,
I think the strength in this movie just comes from a lot of, I would agree, the motivations of Namor is like awesome. And like that, having him being probably the best villain of this phase is no, I would say, coincidence, just because Coogler made another arguably the best villain, or maybe second best villain in all of Marvel, in Killmonger. Again, I think the only thing I have an issue with is that his like three dimension aspect is very similar to Killmonger's, as far as like wanting to like, I'd say like protect his people and wanting to Wakanda to be the ones to help do it. But at the same time, I do think that their presences of the presence of Killmonger and the presence of Namor is so different. And like Tena Kuerta was so far, like you were saying, Gooch, so charismatic. And I think he really did a good job of like presenting that new character well. And to the credit of the Marvel CGI techs, which have probably been taking a very unfair amount of shit for something that is not their fault and should be in the fault of whoever schedules the Marvel movies.
Oh, no. To be clear, any problem with the VFX, I will not place on the VFX teams. They're clearly working underneath what are pretty much inhumane conditions at this point. Like they're pumping too much stuff out and asking too much out of these teams.
Yeah, and like so in fairness to them, I do want to say that there were some parts in this where it looks a little sketchy, like the two suits that they introduced were like, the suits were weird. But I do want to note that when they did the exploration of I forget their home base, what they call it, like
to
something. Well, their underwater city looked incredible. It was absolutely gorgeous. I thought they did a phenomenal job with that. And that's something that's very hard to do, as you can ask James Cameron to figure that out. It took him 10 years to figure out how to do shit underwater. I thought it looked absolutely beautiful. And some of the other stuff, like again, building on top of Wakanda, I think it looked really well, really good as well. And that's something that was always impressive about the first Black Panther, is the world building of Wakanda was so exceptionally well done. And like, it does make you feel like it's that fantastical, like, I'll just use this comparison because I restarted Harry Potter the other day, like Hogwarts, right? Like when you get introduced to Hogwarts for the first time, that's what it felt like getting introduced to Wakanda, because it's like this super magical place. Like it's where Hogwarts is all dreary and gross and English. This is more like vibrant and awesome. And I think they did the same sort of things building to a smaller degree the world of those mutants underwater. I thought that was awesome. Again, I think my biggest complaints are that the score didn't match, especially in those big, really super emotional moments like that throne room scene and some of the other ones. And I think if I could have had a personal choice on how to navigate who takes over the mantle of Black Panther, I wouldn't have picked Shuri. I don't think Letitia Wright is a particularly strong actress. Like, I think she does okay in this movie. If I had a choice, it would have been Lupita Nyong'o becoming Black Panther. And then they show in the post-credit that it's her son is T'Challa, T'Challa's kid, also named T'Challa. Like, you pass it on to him, because I think she is just like that more charismatic character that would also, in the same route as Shuri, like want to kind of burn the world down because her husband was or her man, whatever, was taken away from her so unjustly. And would also, in like for her motivations, even going back to the first Black Panther, like she wants to help like people around the world outside of Wakanda. And she's frustrated with Wakanda with that shit as well. So I think you could have had a really, really good sort of back and forth between her and Namor, because like they both kind of think the same thing. Like, we should be helping other people, like not just like isolating Wakanda. So if I get chosen, it would have been her. She's also obviously an Academy Award winning actress, right? For 12 Years a Slave, I think. Fucking incredible. Yeah. She should have been the Black Panther, in my opinion. But other than that, again, Angela Bassett crushed this movie. So fucking good. And that throne, the scene in the UN where she brings those soldiers out, so fucking cool. That got a great pop from the audience. That was awesome. And then the scene of her speech was super emotional, and that got the job done. And I agree with you, Jeff. The ending of this, Killmonger had a very well-earned death. That was an awesome death scene. I think having him live and having him sort of set up for the future with the motivations we know he has is really, really well done. And I, to a degree, I'll disagree with you, Gooch. I think that final fight scene, like I think the warship thing was cool,
and like the sonic effects were interesting. I do also think that like when they got into the bigger scope, it definitely lost touch a little bit. And the more they used those three suits, which weren't didn't look particularly great, it also lost.
They were, did you like the fight on the beach?
The beach fight.
No, I like the fight on the beach. I like that a lot. Yeah. In fact, I wish we had more time in that solo fight. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the suits just felt. I liked Riri Williams' character quite a bit, but I feel like introducing.
Yeah, she was pretty good. She made me very excited for that show. She's got very charismatic.
Yes, but the issue there is it's taking so much time, and when you go to meet her, it's the movie changes tones entirely. Completely. And it feels like you're just setting up for things down the line at that point. I'm not sure you needed her.
Again, that was the storyline I think was the biggest, like.
So you think.
But see, like, that was the one where I can't fault them almost to an extent because it's like Coogler's very involved with Ironheart, apparently. He's not like directing it or anything, but apparently he's very involved with the look of the show, the feel of the show. And from what I think, like, we've read. Ironheart is going to have the same vibe as Black Panther. He's like very adamant about that. He's like, okay. So that's why, like, I feel like that was the one thing where they were like, oof, like, it's a lot to fit in here now. But like, I don't think they can cut that out. That's kind of like the tricky thing that I think they did have to juggle. Not saying you're wrong in that sense. Like, I do agree. Like, that's one of those ones where you're like, you could have probably removed it. But at that point, like, I don't know if they
here's the thing I just realized I would cut from this movie if I had time, and it would be the Countess. And honestly, the entirety of the CIA. That would be the one thing I think you could cut from this movie and not really lose anything at all. Because they really didn't have any consequence whatsoever on the movie. So that's it. And like their scenes felt like rushed, but also like why they have no point. Like they don't influence any of the decision making in this movie. Like, I don't know. But yeah.
No, they don't. And I would cut that. I would cut Riri Williams stuff. I would cut the suits. I really don't like giving Okoye a suit because I think what made her so cool and those characters so cool is they don't need the suits. They're the really strong, badass characters. And the suits they looked not good. I don't think the Predator suits, the suit I didn't like
kill them. Me. I don't know.
I did not like them. Like I said, there is great stuff in here.
The suit was justified, though, with Okoye's character, because she was never going to beat.
Yeah.
She couldn't beat him.
They're superhuman. They're mutants.
I think she would have figured it out. Working as a team.
I don't know about that.
Working as a team with Michaela Cole and Lupita. I think they could have figured
it out. They were like immortal. They kept healing from the wounds.
You sound like the worst coach of the Wakandans of all time. Like, just get back out there.
Get back
out there. Give it one more shot.
Come on, get off the mat. Keep pushing forward. That's like every other like shonen hero. it just runs. I think it really runs long in the middle, and I think that hurts, especially when we get to Shuri's decision to not burn the world, not take his life.
The Killmonger moment with her was cool though. I like that a lot.
Yeah, it was, and it was and it was a big sigh of relief too, because I was like, "Oh, please do not CGI and Chadwick Boseman."
Yeah, here.
That was spoiled for me. Like I saw that on I forget where someone had sent that to me, like just that he was in it, and so that didn't like I knew it was gonna be him. But when we left the theater, there was somebody behind me who referenced Ghostbusters. I go, "Oof, glad they didn't do Ghostbusters Afterlife here."
Good lord, that would have been
they would. I will say what you want about Kevin Feige and Marvel and like the CGI team and like what the effects team, what they do. I think you get enough Kevin Feige these days to know that he would not have done that.
Yeah,
they would not have done that.
It would have been eight.
And I like that she has that. I don't know. See, like I think I do differ. I think from the both of you, maybe. Like I did like Letitia Wright in that role, and I do like her motivations and her kind of push and pull, and then it goes kind of deeper than just like she lost her brother. Like I did like that, and I like that she had to confront.
I love Killmonger that team. I love that storyline. I love both those. I think you're with me, Jeff. The story probably started with just the idea of allyship between minority communities. I think that's where the backbone of the movie started, and then once Chadwick Boseman passed, of course, they had to add in that you have to develop that grief storyline too. And I think it's done incredibly well. I just think adding in the Riri Williams, adding in the CI, I think that just it takes so much away from those other two when you're already looking at a pretty bloated movie, and it really hurts the other things going on.
Because I do like the nuts and bolts of this movie in terms of like Wakandan storyline. I kind of like, I almost like it a little, like, I think there's a, I think Coogler was like very in his bag with a lot of that stuff, with like a lot of like the emotional stuff. I think it kind of even trumps a lot of what we saw in the first movie. Like, I think the first movie is a very, it's not simple, but it's simplified a little more. It's streamlined more than this movie. But like when you strip down maybe kind of the outside stuff, the stuff that you can tell was definitely in there with the idea that Chadwick Boseman will be alive, like you get like the emotional shit. I think a lot of it's better than what we get in the first. But I think the first is better almost by default in the fact that like it's, again, it's a little tighter. It kind of hits its beats quicker. But again, it's a weird thing. And I'm not going to like spare it points in my ranking because like, oh, it's unfair. Like, he obviously passed. But it's worth commenting on at least, or it's like, it's interesting that, you know, you can tell they tried to make both work, and it's almost like they didn't have an option. Because I do think just a straight up like weird tribute movie would not have worked either, though.
Oh no, that would just been too dour for the MCU, which is no.
I will say too, by the way,
to it, it just wouldn't feel right.
Thumbs up for killing the queen.
Me too. I was like, oh, just fucking let's hear the heart monitor go back online. She's gonna live. Yeah, but yeah, they went for it.
Like when they pan and they're at the funeral again, I was like, holy shit, she actually died. When they pulled off the coffin, I was like, that's another thing you don't get much in the MCU. You know, you get like the stakes. And even people say that about Endgame. They're like, they're fake stakes. Like, yeah, they died in Infinity War, but they all came back except for Natasha. And, well, I guess she died in Endgame. But this one, I was like, oh, fuck. Like, there could be some other people. I thought Okoye might die. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, man. Like, they're going for it here. So I appreciated that as well in the story.
Yeah, adding those stakes in made a huge difference in that final fight, too, because you're like, oh, she might actually die here. Like, it makes a big difference.
I thought Shuri was going to die. And now that was different because that was partly tied in the fact that everyone was mad that she's an anti-vaxxer and they wanted her out of the movie. Like, did they write her out of this movie? Yeah. And also, by the way, Winston Duke is M'Baku is
he's good.
I think he's fucking
totally awesome. Different side of him too in this movie compared to the first one. Like, he was just kind of like the reluctant savior in that, and then this one he's like way more emotional and has more depth, which is kind of cool. I like that a lot.
His development's very cool.
Yeah, I like that he,
like, through the movie.
Sorry, say it again.
His development's very cool through the movie. Like, that's very well done. Him at the beginning, I mean, on the same side with Shuri, just kill the fish man. And then developing towards the end, he gives her that piece of advice, like, if we kill their god, like, we'll never have an
eternal war, something they said. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was a cool one. See, that's where it's like, you know, we talk about the MCU and we kind of talk about it in Andor too, is like, when you put in, and I'm not, like, again, I'm not saying like they just went in there and they just wrote like this fucking Tarantino-esque, you know, Aaron Sorkin script, but like, it's nice to hear. It was nice to hear like that line. I'm glad you brought that up. I'm talking about like killing, like you're killing their god. Like, you don't think they're going to, what do you think they're going to do? Not fucking come for us after that. Like, it's shit like that, that gave it like a weight where we talked about it. Like, they needed to land this plane because ending the MCU, this phase with another movie that, and I enjoyed Love and Thunder. I enjoyed it less on rewatch. I've kind of stayed completely the same on Multiverse of Madness. I wish there had been a little more time to breathe in that movie, but this was clearly the best out of this phase. Like, I think there's really no doubt.
It's number two for me behind Multiverse of Madness, but they are close and they are plagued by very similar issues for me, which is just a little too much going on at points.
Yeah, they both had, I would say, different goals too. And I think that the goal set for Black Panther was much harder than the goal set for Multiverse of Madness. Yeah. And that's where I give this movie, I think, a lot of credit. And it definitely, to a degree, influences how I look at it, where, like, I'm looking at some structural problems with it or whatever, and I'm like, oh, this could have been better. Like, the uphill battle this movie had to be competent whatsoever is insanely high and steep, and I think they climbed that very well. Outside of those very few issues, like the score, and I think for me, again, the choice of using Shuri instead of Lupita Nyong'o as Black Panther. Like, those are the only two things, like, I would wish were truly different, and that's it. And for the rest of the movie, again, it had something that I think was really missing from the rest of the movies in Phase 4 so far. It had, like, true scenes, you know what I mean? like scenes you'll remember, like that scene in the UN, like that's a scene for Marvel.
Yeah.
Like that her speech mm-hmm. in the throne, that's a scene for Marvel. Like that's something I don't think we really got out of the first out of the rest of the movies in this phase four so far. There's nothing like that. Like there's great action pieces, there's great other shit. There's not like something that's gonna stick with you, if that makes sense. And that's what I think this movie excelled at.
Black Panther Wakanda Forever, 88 from Kenjack, 89 from me, 77 from Gooch. Next week we're doing, we'll see if we do Fablemans. I want to do it when people can see it. We're definitely doing Terrifier 2.
Have you guys seen All Quiet on the Western Front? I watched that last night. People have been asking us to do that.
Yeah, we could do that. That's on Netflix.
If we need something to plug in, I thought that was fantastic.
Solid.
I think, yeah.
Is the menu wide this weekend?
That might be. I've actually been getting, people have been asking me about that. Like, I've been asked that by friends. Like,
if the menu is wide, let's do the menu in Terrifier 2. We can talk about All Quiet on the Western Front. I think All Quiet's solid. It's not my favorite of the year, but it's very solid. Terrifier 2, baby. Art the Clown.
More like Fart the Clown.
We're a little heavy on the show today, so we'll rip through these. But top five comic book movie sequels. Doesn't have to be number two. Could be number two, three, four, five, whatever. My number five, I'll start it out, then we'll go to Ken, Jack, and Gooch. My number five, Captain America, Winter Soldier. Winter Soldier is still a movie that they haven't, like, when you saw it, you're like, oh, they're going to do more shit like this. And they kind of haven't. Some reasons being that they got very cosmic because of Thanos and stuff. But even, like, Falcon and the Winter Soldier, you were like, I wish this would have been a little more Winter Soldier-y, like the movie itself. But Winter Soldier was a pretty big turning point in the MCU, at least, in terms of, like, oh. Like, the quality here can be actually pretty fucking good. The movie's badass. And Bob Redford.
That's right.
So, come on.
My number five is Ragnarok, which I have at a 93. You want to talk about movies that just flip the script on a character? Like, Thor, easily the worst of the Avengers going into Ragnarok, and instantly became arguably the best. Just based off that one movie. And that one really, I think, just... It's so great. And it's not great because, like, oh, look, Taika Waititi knows how to use colors or whatever. It's like, it is fucking funny. It's really, really funny. It's got solid action and it's got, like, an awesome use of, I would say, soundtrack as well. Like, that immigrant song scene on the bridge, the Rainbow Bridge, is so fucking cool. It's just like the ultimate good time, which is so funny because, again, those first two Thor movies are so dour and so depressing. And then they just absolutely, like, one full 180 and did the opposite thing, and it was so much better. And I still to this day really love Ragnarok, and I could rewatch it 1,000 times. It's so much fun. Oh, and the Willy Wonka scene. That's also, I could watch that part.
That's my favorite scene in any Marvel movie.
The music, too. Those musical, the pin drops are so good, especially with the immigrant song. So fucking awesome. I have a question before we start, because it is on my list. And I don't want to fuck this up. Logan, will it count?
I'd say yes.
Because it is.
Yeah, I counted Logan.
Okay.
It's a sequel.
So
that's not our fault. They didn't know how to fucking make these movies. They had to go back and retroactively change everything.
Boy, oh boy. So my number five is going to be Spider-Man 2. A lot of people consider it the best of all time in terms of comic book movies. I'm not there, but I think it is. In terms of Spider-Man movies, as good as you can do in terms of the Peter Parker side of things. They really nail in that movie how shitty Peter's life is. And there is some just iconic scenes too. I think Doc Ock is just horrifying as a villain. The Ken Jack, you've referenced this scene many times, but when he's on the operating room table and his tentacles start moving, it is fucking awesome. It's so specific and niche genre. Like, it looks so cool in that movie. Everything about it. And Spider-Man, it's one of my favorite characters. I mean, it is probably my second favorite comic book character. I think he's just so interesting and so relatable. Spider-Man 2.
Was the Upside Down kiss in that one or the first one? I forget. Was the Upside Down kiss in that or the first one? First one.
Aunt May's death. First one too, right?
Aunt May? No,
she dies in the first one.
She's right? In the second the one, second isn't she?
No,
second one is her death.
She's definitely the second one because Doc Ock carries her up the bank, right?
Wait, what?
And her great speech.
Shoot, I don't remember. I thought she was in the third one too. I must have really missed it.
I don't think she's not in the third.
Yeah, no, she's definitely in the second one because she's in the bank when Doc Ock.
Yes, that's when they're in, and they're throwing the coins at each other. That's one spot where the graphics don't look exactly great, but it is a fun scene.
For me, Ken Jack had it at 5, Thor Ragnarok, just a blast. Kind of wish Thor Love and Thunder had been the same. I think Thor Love and Thunder needed to breathe more. Thor Ragnarok just kind of hits all its beats, never lets up. My only complaint of that movie is I wish they were on Sakaar more. I wish they were like in that world a little more, because that's where it was fucking insanity. But yeah, Ragnarok was great. And another one of those, like, this is what we need more of.
My number 4 was your number 5, Captain America and the Winter Soldier. I always thought that like Captain America 1 was like, okay, like it's like a solid movie. It doesn't blow anything off the doors. It felt very old school. When you watch it now, it feels very old school comic book movie. But Winter Soldier is essentially just an espionage movie that happens to take place in the world of Captain America, which is like kind of what we've been talking about with Andor, like why that makes it, what makes it so good. Like it has so little to do with the more meta stuff in Marvel. And that is what's so awesome about it. That end. The fact that the action in this movie is so insane. The elevator fight scene, the highway fight scene, so goddamn good. Really, really well action choreographed. And obviously Sebastian Stan crushed it as Winter Soldier, and all the other characters around them were really good as well. Bob Redford, like not essentially like a banger villain, but like his part to play in the movie was really good.
Also probably the best Black Widow movie, right?
Yeah, for
either that or Endgame. Your
performance standpoint, yeah.
I mean, she's a lot of fun in that movie. No, great picks. My number 4 is going to be X2. X-Men, X2.
Going old school.
I love that movie. It's easily the best of the Bryan Singer X-Men movies.
Shout out to Bryan Singer from The Gooch Man.
Yeah. No, come on. That's not what I said.
Put that on the quote card after this episode. Shout out to the Bryan Singer X-Men movies - Gooch.
Shout out Bryan Singer as a director. As a person, not so much.
So it is a shout out to Bryan Singer. Thank you for reaffirming. We'll cut that.
But X2 also has one of my favorite openings to any movie Magneto's ever. Magneto's
Escape? Yeah.
The Nightcrawler.
Oh, yeah, no, yeah. But Magneto's Escape is in that, right? Isn't that also two great scenes? I mean,
but that's a little further in when he pulls the metal out of the man's body. They're feeding him an iron diet. Incredible. Yeah, no, Nightcrawler's introduction with Beethoven that playing music, over the top of it. Cool. So fucking cool. Really nails the Nightcrawler character too, which is something most X-Men movies don't do a great job of.
Is that Alan Cumming?
Considering he's like one of the best X-Men characters, most beloved, they don't exactly nail him all the time. Great lore in the background too, between the strife between Wolverine and General Stryker. Shout out Brian Cox once again. Jean Grey, phenomenal in this movie. Cyclops, he's there.
certainly there.
And then Magneto is just a phenomenal villain. I mean, really great. Mm-hmm.
And shout out Professor X.
It's incredible that we had two great Magnetos. Like the chances, like,
and honestly, to a degree, two great Professor X's too. Very wrong.
Yeah. I like James McAvoy's Professor X quite a bit. You're right. So yeah, X2.
The scene in First Class where Magneto kills all the Nazis in Argentina or whatever, or Brazil. That's so fucking cool. It's not on my list here, but like, damn, I love that scene.
Is that the bar? Is what you're talking about? Yes. And he's speaking fluent German all the time because he can't.
Yes, exactly. Fucking awesome. Love that scene. Sorry, go ahead.
We rolled into a Bryan Singer, but shout out Brian Cox.
Shout out Brian Cox.
I wonder if we ever get an interview with him, we got to ask him about that. Just that movie. Because I feel like he probably fucking hates it.
He's in a lot of movies like that, though. Like, you'll randomly be watching some, like, goofball shitty movie, and then there's Brian Cox. Like,
I mean, Super
Troopers. There you go. Exactly.
I would say, I'm trying to think of movies. What's one that
He had a really bad role Separation with...
Oh yeah, I just watched it like a few weeks ago. The Independent with John Cena.
Like, what are you doing in here, dude? Like,
oh my god.
Oh,
did you guys?
It's a Peacock movie. Oh,
not to derail the draft.
It's all right. He's, you know what? again, and he's in other things other than Succession, but Succession made him beyond bulletproof.
Not to derail the draft, but did you guys see that video of John Cena posted yesterday?
Oh, what, his ice cream one? Yeah, that's legendary.
Being chilling
is like that's. I did that with the.
Did you see The Rock?
Yeah, The Rock. That's true.
Speaking Chinese too.
The Rock. The Rock posted not a cheat meal. He called it. He had a case of the fuckets. He made a bunch of junk food at like 1 o'clock in the morning. But then somebody tagged me and Ken Jack was like, he's up to it again. I said, actually, kind of respect this. This is not even a. I actually think he ate this. I think he was probably up late. He's probably like, fuck me, man. I've promoted Black Adam for the last 3 years. I'm exhausted. It's all I think about is Black Adam. Like, I'm just going to eat some dog shit food right now. And he just made a bunch of bad food late at night. I'm like, I think he actually ate that.
What did he eat? Let's look it up. What was it?
It's just pancakes. And he made it must have been 12, a dozen eggs. And then he made like 8 biscuits. Like, it was a lot of food. My number 3, I'm cheating because you guys used Walk Hard last week. I'm just combining Infinity War.
I think it's fair.
Infinity War and Endgame are the pinnacle masterclass of the MCU. Each has its own thing that I love the most. They're tied 1A, 1B for me. I do give Endgame a bit of a nod. I think Endgame, I know people like Infinity War more, but Endgame's like emotional shit is, for me, what always gets me to like Endgame more. I know we talk about Avengers Assemble scene, but Endgame just does stuff. Like, I think about Natasha and
Clint.
Steve Rogers, like them just sitting in the Avengers headquarters when she's like eating a sandwich, just like even like those scenes, like it gives you weight to the characters. And it's like, Cap would never say that, Stark would never do that. I'm like, that's the point. They actually had fucking character arcs in these movies for once. Like the marketing theme of that movie was whatever it takes, and whatever it took was them not being themselves. It was them being different, and I always love that about Endgame. Infinity War, Endgame 3 for me.
I'm at the same exact spot. I favor Infinity War a little bit more just because I think the setup for Endgame was just as, for me, it was like good as the actual execution of like the finale for Thanos. And that fight scene on Titan or whatever was so goddamn good too. Two, I think of the, it's not a hot take. Two of like the biggest event movies that have ever come out, period. Two movies that generated, I would say, in my movie going career, the biggest pops ever, in multiple scenes, and just, I would say, incredible stuff. Like, as far as like blockbusters goes, those two are it. And for them they also had like, I would say, a much more uphill battle than like a fucking Avatar has or whatever, where like they have to be the perfect culmination of like, it was, I guess at that point, like 8 years of work. Or something like that, right?
Yeah, 21 movies.
Yeah, it had to be the perfect culmination of all of those movies and combine all of these characters and do it without like really like screwing any individual character over. I think they did that all perfectly in both of those movies, and it was just, it's insanely impressive. I think what they did to them. So yeah, this combo movies for me.
Yeah, number 3 for me. I'm not going to go the combo deal because I do have my gripes with Endgame, but I will go Infinity War here. In my opinion, one of the best paced movies I've ever fucking seen. That movie snaps. The movie just goes from point to point to point. Good Lord. Russo Brothers did a great job. I think the stories behind the scenes of them letting the individual writers that had worked on those characters and let all that collaborative writing event happen worked really well, because those characters continually feel authentic to themselves, outside of Hulk, which I don't love what they did with Hulk in that movie. But yeah, no, Infinity War is just, it is a marvel that not to, no pun intended, it is a marvel that thing worked out. I mean, it is incredible how many moving pieces there are there, and it makes sense. I flipped that movie on for my mom. She understood. She got it, and she, without having to watch all 20 movies before. It is just a good time and very well done. And as it just is it's a comic book reader's dream to see that come together. Very fun. Very, very fun. Mm-hmm. Also, Thanos is just such a good villain in that movie.
He is.
I mean, he is. Josh Brolin.
Brolin's so good.
So good. There's so many great
ones. Two for me. I think we're all going to say it, so I'll just go quick. Yep. Logan. Logan's unreal.
Yeah, do you guys want to leap from all Logan here?
Yeah, right. Infinity War and Endgame are really good. They're some of the best comic book things ever made. But the leap to there's three movies that sit alone in comic book world, and that's Spider-Verse, Logan, and The Dark Knight, which I guess I just put, I'm sure what our number ones are too. Yeah. Is everyone's number one Dark Knight?
Yeah.
Okay, so it's Logan and Dark Knight. That's everyone's two and one.
I'm with you, the point you're making. It's Infinity War is a 91 for me, but then Logan jumps straight up to a 96. Like, there's a very
Logan, Spider-Verse, and Dark Knight, the only comic movies that I have 95 or above. Like, they're in a whole other world.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Like, should have been not, like, it's still a tragedy that Logan did not pick up nominations.
So good.
I mean, that's a movie that 100% deserved it.
The Dark Knight would win Best Picture
if it came out now.
If it was this day and age.
Yeah.
Best movie that
like makes sense. The Dark Knight would absolutely win Best Picture if this was the time period we lived in back when it came out.
I agree.
What did it lose to again?
Yeah. Slumdog. Great movie. I love Slumdog Millionaire. But it was taboo. Oh,
so. But go ahead. Talk more about Logan. I want to hear you gush over it. Come on.
I mean, Logan is writing beyond just like good comic. You know what I mean? When you talk about the writing in Logan, you even talk about it being comic book movie writing. Mm-hmm. You're just like, this is just great movie. It was literally nominated for an Oscar for screenplay.
Oh, is that where it picked up its nom? Okay.
Yeah, it is so fucking grizzled and emotional, and just you feel every drop of blood and like heart in that movie. And it's just one of those insane things. You're like, this is this franchise that doesn't know how to get out of its own fucking way sometimes. Logan is another one of those bar setters, just like,
and it's a neo-western that I think it almost in the same thing we keep talking about today, where like you could replace Logan with a grizzled cowboy or whatever, and it still hits, I think, the same in a lot of ways. If this is like a True Grit type of a storyline. And yeah, I think the Old West setting was sick. The sign off for a lot of the characters was awesome. His fight with his younger self or clone version was really cool. And then I think that final scene where he injects the shit and goes and just murders everybody, fucking so good. And then his death scene, obviously, they're so well earned. And I think we talked about it a bit with like Deadpool 3 and all that shit, but like, I think that's like as good as a sign off as any comic book movie character has ever gotten. And Hugh Jackman really, he poured like his whole heart and soul into Wolverine Forever, and I think he poured it all into this last last performance. But it really paid off because it was an awesome and super emotional moment. And Daphne Keane too, who's in a few other things now, so good in that movie.
Yeah, I was gonna bring her up. Daphne Keane's phenomenal in that movie. Especially not even just for a child actress, but just a supporting actress. She was, I mean, incredible. Mm.
Scary.
Jeff, you said it. You feel every punch of that movie, which is something the comic book genre often struggles with. It's like you just see someone get hit. You don't really. You're just like, oh, they're just kind of bouncing off each other. Doesn't really stick. You feel every single, I mean, crack of the bone. It's gruesome at times. It hurts. Like, good lord, that's just a phenomenon. And it looks incredible. Can't go without saying that. It's probably the best looking out of anything on this list right here that I have in front of me. It's the Western backdrop did it well. Mm-hmm. And Patrick Stewart's great too. It's a great sign off for Patrick Stewart's Professor X.
Yeah, it's true.
Sir Patrick Stewart.
Agreed.
And then
I don't want to say about Dark Knight. I mean, we haven't said already ever. I mean, Dark Knight it's incredibly well acted. That is one of the best paced movies of all time.
Yes.
It like all time. You don't even have a moment to fucking breathe, and I mean that in a good way. What can you even say about the fucking Dark Knight?
I know. Every single thing has been said. It's crazy.
A fun story about the what's the story behind the Joker's theme in that? There was something really interesting that Hans Zimmer apparently had worked on it for like 5 months and then just accidentally hit a note and found that. Like, you know, just that one drawn out string that plays in the background when he like delivers monologues.
I don't know. You know that Glenn Powell, who we're going to interview, is actually in The Dark Knight Rises. He's the traitor that Bane, like, I think threatens or kills or something.
I did not realize that.
I was watching it the other day and I was just like, I did not remember Glenn Powell was in this at all. He's just like a day trader.
Hmm.
Yeah, there you go.
Hmm. Dark Knight is the pinnacle of comic book movies. And
anything ever,
It changed the game. It's one of the most impactful movies ever made because it changed how we view comic book movies, changed how we make them. Amazingly enough, I will say, you could – it did not mold Iron Man. Like, Iron Man should still get its due to an extent because they came out in the same year. But Iron Man's success was a little more gradual. The Dark Knight was a phenomenon, and The Dark Knight definitely deserves the most credit there, though it didn't inspire Iron Man.
No, it would have been interesting to see if, had The Dark Knight come out maybe a year or two prior to the release of Iron Man, would Marvel have attempted to do what The Dark Knight and Nolan's trilogy was doing, which is a much darker, more grounded tone. I don't think so, because I think Kevin Feige is very much in tune with the comic book world, which is more bombastic and colorful and, you know, a little less serious. But yeah, I do wonder if had one come out before the other, would they have influenced each other more? It's kind of an interesting turning point. Because DC continually tried to recapture that, I mean, without hardly any success for a better part of a decade, trying to go back to that well. And you end up with things like Josh Whedon's Justice League.
So that's it. Those are our rankings. Terrifier 2 next week. Mm-hmm.
All Quiet. We'll do All Quiet. Someone literally just commented.
We'll talk about Quiet. We'll talk Terrifier 2. And then what's the other one we said? The Menu. If The Menu's wide, we'll see The Menu. Yeah. We'll talk about The Menu. But get your Art the Clown fans rejoice.
Exactly.
Literally no one's clapping.
You're scared to watch the movie.
No, you're scared. You're scared I'm gonna rip it. You're scared I'm gonna rip
it. Like, I just call it what it is. You're just terrified to watch the movie. It's okay.
You're scared I'm gonna take this movie down. I'm gonna take Art down a million pegs. You're scared of what I'm about to do. I'm about to end this man's whole career.
All right, that's it. For Ken, Jack, and Gooch, I'm Jeff DeLitt. We'll talk to you next time.
Have a good week at the box office, folks.
What happens when you lock 18 coworkers in an office for 1 week to compete for $250,000 of cash? This is Surviving Barstool Season 5, presented by Rumble Premium. Each episode released 3 hours early, so get it ad-free before anyone else, only when you join Rumble Premium. Surviving Barstool premieres Sunday, August 9th at 5 p.m. on Rumble Premium, and everywhere else at 8 p.m.
Stella Blue Coffee's new can lattes are here. Crafted with 100% Colombian coffee, each can is a good source of protein and comes in two smooth flavors, espresso cafe mocha and espresso sweet cream. And whether you're braving your morning commute or chasing your pup, Stella Blue cans are for those always on the go and for those who care. Stella Blue is more than just great coffee. It's about giving back. I named the brand after my rescue dog, Stella, who inspired our mission to help more dogs find their forever homes. Every purchase supports animal rescue organizations. So when you drink Stella Blue, you're not just fueling your day, you're saving a dog's life. Try the new cans today. Taste the difference and make a difference. All new Stella Blue coffee canned lattes now available at StellaBlueCoffee.com or subscribe on Amazon for 10% off.